Hello, we are the math people. In statistics, we are reading a book called How to Lie with Statistics. Mm-hmm. We will be talking about chapters 1 through 4, giving our opinions. So, on the front cover, there is a quote that says there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. And this is by Disraeli. And I think that this quote is true because statistics can be misleading. When you present your data, it depends on how you present it. It can make you think one thing, and that thing may not actually be true. What do you guys think?
It's mainly with graphs and charts. Depending on how the person want to present their chart, they can make you read it how they want you to read it instead of the actual facts behind the chart.
Yeah, and I think this relates to the book because the book is called How to Lie with Statistics. We're going to talk about how statistics are, can be misleading. Yeah.
Especially try to get people to, believe whatever you're trying to prove. With the whole graphing, with the whole numbers and the magazines, some examples are they change up certain stuff to make it the same as the other one, just so people could believe what they're trying to prove. And as a real world example, there's a lot of things that's actually going on, even with politics and like school or advertisement or like superstars or whatever. Everyone uses statistics to lie.
Okay.
The first scenario stated that class of 24, if you send your children to Yale, you won't have to work at your old age. And in the book, what the author is saying is he disagrees with the statement Yale is making, because how can you get in contact with all of those people in that class? Some people may move to Egypt, some people may move out of the country, some people may move, like, people might die, you never know. And how long is going to take for your child to finish college for them to start looking at you? Because they got to graduate and they got to go through their process of school. I disagree with what the Yale is saying, just as the author, because it makes more sense if they take care of you now while your child is in school than afterwards when your child is graduating, to become the yeoman class of 24.
I disagree with what Ruby had to say, because I feel as though if Yale start taking care of the parents now, what if the kids drop out? Then now what? And I don't do what you said, man. Oh, my
That's
God.
That's a good point. I agree.
This said...
What happens if the child drops out?
What?
Know what you're saying. They
say if you send your child to Yale, you won't have to pay, you have to work in your old age, and the child won't have to work in their old age. It don't matter if they graduate or not.
But you said that if the child is go to school and graduate, the parent doesn't have to worry after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said, you said that they should already start doing that while the child is in school. That's
they
what
do.
You said.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I disagree with that, because what if this child doesn't graduate from Yale and they decide to go to a different school?
You'll stop paying for the child.
Well, I wouldn't want them to pay then. If I was Yale, I wouldn't want to pay for your parents' thing, and then you decide to leave my school for what reason?
Your old age. You wouldn't have to work age.
Exactly. I understand. That's what the book said. But you said they should start paying the parents already while this child is still in school.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you said. And I said,
they should start helping their parents now, because all that money they already give, where they going to get money from?
If they helping how they going to pay for, the parents going to pay for the, it don't make no sense, because
the money they're giving to the parents is way less amount than what they actually pay for the child to go
then
to school.
Then that
means expensive.
All right, then that means they should just make the tuition cheaper, because it don't make no sense giving them money while they giving money
then
to
Then that's
you.
Another case, but in this case, I'm pretty sure the amount that they would give to, like, if Ronald was the father, I'm the child, the money he paid to Yale is more than what they give him.
But you're saying they should pay why they...
Yes, I agree with that. I didn't say they should pay. I said they should help
them
out.
They should help the parents
while they're in school.
That would make the tuition cheaper. Instead of giving them money.
They could do that too. Instead of whatever they want to do. But I'm thinking, while the child's in school, they should still help them wait until they reach their old age or
so
whatever.
If they helping them out during their stage of school.
Process.
So what's going
to
happen? After
to
school.
Who?
The parents. They still should be helping them out.
Yes!
For a reason.
Until my old age. That's what it says.
I don't understand why we still helping you out. If, all right, for example, if I was y'all personally, I wouldn't want to be helping you out while your child don't go to school and then still help you out while your children are in school.
So what if my child graduates from school and by the time I reach my old age, I'm at a point I can barely like.
Then the money go to your child, and if that child died,
why would I want my money to go to my child if I pay my money? Why can't I enjoy my money?
You dead.
So that's my point.
To your grave. Your grandchildren.
If you get sick, like.
If you get sick.
Or what if I get sick?
It go to your medicine.
Why my child is still in school, and I don't have no money because I pay Yale.
You pay Yale? Who told you to go to
Yale? Exactly. That's what
nobody told you to say.
Either make
your
tuition cheaper, like you said. Or they take care of me now. I don't want to wait till my old age. How you know I'm going to make
why
it to my old age?
Why are they taking care of you now? It don't make sense. You are paying them for your child
to
go to school.
I said why like 10 times.
You are paying
but
for your child
made the
to
contract.
Go to school.
They made the contract.
Nobody asked your child to go to school. Yeah.
Nobody asked you to make that contract.
But like I said, no. Their contract is... you said the statistics said after... a certain amount of year when the child is graduating.
No.
That's what you said the statistics say.
I said that's what I think. I think they shouldn't wait after they graduate.
That's what I'm attacking.
If you send your child to school, no matter what, if they graduate or not.
Let the child graduate then. Because now you know the child graduated from Yale. They got a Yale degree. Whatever benefit they get out of Yale, that's from, like, Yale is the name they're going to be pushing.
First of all, depending what they want to do, that 4 years doesn't take you nowhere. You have to go to another process of school. So
it doesn't matter.
They got
to graduate from. Yeah, you don't have to do that. They still graduated from Yale. Now they can start helping the parents in their old
age. By doing what?
What do you mean by doing who?
By doing, how can they help their parents? They can barely help themselves. Because they're all alone.
You say Yale. I'm talking about Yale. I'm not talking about the daughter or whatever, the child. I'm not talking about
Yale. How can they help themselves?
How can Yale help
them? Oh, Yale. How can
Yale
help
their parents? But you saying they should help while the child is in school. Why am I helping you when you're supposed to be the one paying me?
I already pay you. So now, the book stated, whoever sends their child to Yale will not have to work in the old age and the child.
Mm-hmm, that's what the book says.
Yes. I'm saying, while I'm in school, why can't you just keep helping me more?
Helping your parents more?
Either my son or me. Because if you're in college, I'm pretty sure it's other stuff that you need in college.
Mm-hmm.
It could make it easier for him or it could make it easier for me. Like
that's not only y'all, that can be any school. You have to look for that benefit yourself. Y'all cannot just give you
But we're talking about
you
right now.
We're talking about y'all. But you're saying that y'all should be helping you. No, you have to look
I'm
for
I'm saying
that
based
yourself.
On the contract, I disagree with what they're saying.
About the contract? That's what I said. I agree with it, then I disagree with you.
What the contract says?
You said the contract said. The contract said that after the child graduate in the mid-age of the parents, right? They will be helping the parents out.
That's what the country said?
That's what it said.
No, that's not what it said.
Okay, what did it say?
The country said when you send your child to Yale, you or your child will not have to work in your old age. And that's what the author is questioning. Is that true? Because he don't agree with it. Because he's saying, what if I move to another place? What if my child is somewhere else? What if
then
I'm somewhere else?
That's not their fault. They can't.
Exactly. That's what he's saying. The statistic behind it is not true. They're lying to the people. There's no way you could reach with those people.
But people, that's common sense. I think that's personal.
It's not
common sense. If you move, that's your business. That's
so
not
you
your business.
So you want to wait until my son is done before I do my life? So why can't they help me now then?
Because your son is going to my school. And at that time,
you have to pay
tuition. For me, what am I paying you for?
No, you're not understanding. You're saying that you wait afterwards.
Yeah.
Even the author doesn't agree because
the
statistic doesn't agree with whatever he's saying. Like, what if Rhino want to go to California to live? He's tired of Philly. Oh, no, I can't wait. I got to wait for 3 years because my son is in college.
Moving doesn't mean anything. Moving, they will still give you money because you just moved.
How you know? They don't know where you at.
What do you mean? I'm
like, it's not like
another country or
it's not like
state.
It's not like a
Unless they're telling you, and if they're telling you that you have to stay in a specific place that you can't move, then that's a different situation. But like, it's America. You can move to any place and you still get that money they actually.
How are they gonna get to the whole class of 20? That's like class of 2013 now. That's the lady is telling us. If you pay for my life insurance when you reach your old age, I'm gonna take care of your child.
If they do,
is that possible? They can barely get money to pay. For,
yeah. They yeah. They can barely get money. You're right. Yeah.
Stop it. Go ahead.
So. It was a part of the book that was talking about samples, and it was saying that, for instance, if there was like a barrel full of beans, and then there were red beans and white beans, if you took a handful out, you could like determine from that handful the ratio of red to white beans from just your handful. I think that is true. That's generally true. Yes. And for the yield, too. That's true.
Well, for the same knowledge for the Yale,
yes,
to understand the statistics, he take the white beans and the red beans, and that's why he disagreed with what this thing.
Yes.
But if the red beans, I feel as though with that situation, he is right, because how can they know how many? Ouch.
Who's right? Ronald's right?
No. Ronald just say what the book say. Ronald, what do you think about it?
I think it's right. I think that as long as it's mixed perfectly, like if it's the red and white beans are mixed in perfectly, not if it's like all red on the top, all white on the bottom, I think it is true. You can, because I mean, who's going to count every single bean that's in the barrel? So
I kind of feel as though he left out some information about the mixed part, because he never said if it was mixed or not. If he would have said it was mixed, that would have made me believe that it would the statistic would have been right. But it was never stated that it was that beans was mixed. It was just told that they took a handful of beans of red and
white
beans.
But I think that would work for like any situation. Like, what if it's? Well, I guess not. Maybe not. Because if it's like a group of people, and you take a group of people from a population, you can't like make judgment on people. I mean, I can understand beans, but I can understand like people. Like race, for instance, let's say we were talking about demographics for a neighborhood. If you like took a handful out of a neighborhood, it could be from a section that's it could be from like a section that's dominantly one neighborhood. I mean, one ethnicity. So you couldn't really use that for like race, right?
Right.
So we all agree with the beans.
The third scenario in chapter one talked about the two magazines, the Herald magazine and the True Story magazine, and how when doing this, when they were accounting for the censuses, how the True Story magazine had the most viewers and the Herald magazine had less viewers. But when the books, when the magazines were sold, the Herald magazine were sold more. They were sold, how many magazines? The True magazine, it was millions that were sold, and then the Herald magazine, it was only 1,000, well, 10,000 that was sold.
100,000.
Hundreds of thousands. With this example, I feel as though that the author is kind of right, because it don't make no sense for the love story to get higher vote during the census when it didn't when the magazines first came out.
I agree, yeah. It makes no sense. I mean, it's not like a good representation of the data, because it could be people that didn't do the census, or because we do know, I mean, there are people here illegally, so they may have had a big influence on the romance novels.
But it's off of the people that actually did the census. Yeah. And some of those people can lie. Maybe that's why the result came out that way.
I agree.
And are you agreeing with what the author say?
I mean, the author just stated, they don't really have an opinion on the conversation.
You just state the facts.
You just stating the facts.
So who are these people that's going around collecting data of the does
America,
the government do it?
Based on the book? Based on the two magazines?
No, they do it for any question. So, but the question had came up with the two magazines, the horror magazine or the love story.
Which was the one the book stated?
Uh-huh.
Oh. I think there's some, like, legal things behind this whole, like, things.
Go.
There's no way it could be true if one magazine was sold more than the other one. In this case, the Harper's magazine was sold more than the true story. But came to find out the true story was the amount more than...
When they did the census, this true story had more...
More views than the Harper magazine. Or maybe that could work also...
Maybe people are just
started,
lazy.
Started to like buy the true story more and more. Or I don't know.
I think it's just people lazy because I know my family, we don't really answer all the questions truthfully.
We just answer to
get it out the way.
And people that knocks on the door sometimes just ask questions and you just... And the thing about it, the time to come around your house is, it's not all the people who be at work, who be at your home. The adults and stuff. It's just like kids. People be at work. People be outside doing things. It's not like you informing these people, I'm going to come on your door, at your door to ask you a few questions about books and magazines. So maybe if the readers know what they're interviewing about, somehow, some way, they could all sit at home a day. They could pick a day. But other than that, it's just like a bias type of knowledge or method behind it, which I don't agree with it at all because, like she said, people come to the house, just get out of my face. I just want to answer your question so you could go home. That's basically what I would do, so it's biased.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just a book. It's not like they're going to take it serious.
Exactly.
Just wasting their time.
We'll be moving on to chapter two. Chapter two is about average and how there are different averages and people just assume there's only one average. In the book, it stated that the mean is one of the average, the mode is an average,
and the median
is an average, three average. Yeah, it stated three averages.
The measures of center as well, I believe they are.
Well, that wasn't mentioned.
And the way they use that to lie with statistic is averaging out certain.
They said in the book they talked about how. People just take small amount of their data instead of taking all the data.
The nuts.
The beans. Yeah, but they saw my numbers in here. Average, actually. Okay. They're taking the average.
Yeah.
Instead of taking a big data and just sum it all up, they just take a small amount of data and try to make it seem like it's a... Well, if it was the whole data, it would probably be like 50% of something. But since they're taking a small amount of something... It would probably be like 90% of something, of what they of their product, which is trying to show their the product they're selling is a good thing or something. And now also for us though, in chapter two, they are trying to make people smoke more, which don't make no sense to me. But I feel like the person that wrote that part made it seem like he is a smoker or she's a smoker. And they trying to say smoking is a good thing or something.
And like, but I think it was written at a time where like, smoking was more accepted.
For stores and like businesses, the author is stating like this person make a certain amount per hour or per year and this other person make a certain amount of time another year. He's comparing both average and doing the mean, the medium, and the mode to average out who will get the most money, and which I think is another biased thing, because you cannot compare. It's two different jobs we're doing. Unless we're doing the same job, working the same amount of hour, that's the only way you could compare us. Other than that, there shouldn't be no comparison in Rhino's doing farming, I'm doing, like, politics. I'm probably going to make more money than him, and he do more work than I do.
And just the fact that it's the average, I mean, that leaves it just unqualified. There's just a lot of room for juggling and whatnot. I mean, it can mean the mode, the median, or the arithmetic mean. And it depends on the data itself. Like it, they may not, the numbers may not add up. Like if it's a number is more common, if a number comes up more, you would, and it may be different than the arithmetic mean itself. So, like for instance, one, if it was a set of numbers, 1, 2, 3, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, and then like 100, the mode would be 5 because it's more 5 than anything else. But then since you have that 100 in there, the outlier, it makes the average higher than the mode. So it depends on what type of mean you're talking about. We shouldn't just always go to arithmetic average as meaning the average. The arithmetic mean is meaning the average because it could be the median and the mode. So
pretty much this chapter is about how the average change depending on your data. Well, we'll be moving on to chapter 3.
So, this is chapter 3, the little figures that are not there. So, something that I agreed with, well, no, something that I agree with is that the author was telling how you can basically present your data to your audience however you want to. You can lead them to false conclusions. Like, for instance, there was an example about, like, age, when a child is supposed to sit up erect in a chair, and he said that by the age of 2, children are supposed to sit up in the chair, and so that makes you, there's no range, there's no, like, between this age and this age, it's just the age of 2, so there are, I'm sure, children that don't sit up straight until 3, and then there are some children that sit up early, like, 1 year
but he
of age.
Called them
so.
Not normal people. The author is saying that the kid have to sit up straight at the age of 2. If you don't sit up straight at the age of 2, you are not normal, which is so stupid to me.
Yes.
I don't think that makes sense at all, because there are babies that sit up before 2, and there are babies that sit up after 2. I don't think that makes any baby retarded or slow or unnormal in any form.
Yeah, I agree. I saw it was this little section that was talking about, like, if you flip a coin, you would think that there's 2 results of flipping a coin, like head and tails, but it said that there were really 4 results of flipping a coin, and I hadn't really realized that. I guess they kind of are. It could be heads, it could be tails, but it could also, like, land on the side where it's, like, sitting up, or you could flip it into the air and it just never comes back. A bird picks it up or something. So, I mean, that's a good example of there being, like, you know, outliers that you just sweep under the carpet, basically. I mean,
I guess
it is a possibility. It's low, but it is a possibility.
But I guess statistic just assumed that the coin would either land on the tail or head. They don't really think about the coin landing on the side or a bird taking it away, because that's not part of it.
Now we will talk about chapter 4, which is called Much Ado About Practically Nothing. In this chapter, it talks about measurements and how if you're slightly off with a measurement, it can make your results, you know, it can mess up your results. So, like, for instance, if there's a measuring stick and it's 3 inches off, your results will be either 3 inches too big or 3 inches too small, and that can be very bad if you're, like, talking, if you're, like, building a building or something, if you're an architect. So, what do you guys think?
And I agree with what you're saying, the chapter is saying, because, for example, when you go to Subway, and this is actually a case that's in process right now, when you go to Subway, they cut off the E-Fresh, they cut off the top of the bread, I guess, to make the bread nicely fit or whatever. But a customer was, I guess, care much about the fact that it cut off his bread, and he's suing Subway Eat Fresh because it's not exactly 5 inches foot long that Subway always $5 foot long.
He wasn't talking about the cut part, the whole bread itself. They say it was 5, like, not when it's cut, the bread roll. He said it wasn't 5 foot long.
5 inches. No,
5 foot.
The bread roll long wasn't 5 foot.
No, 1 foot.
1 foot.
It's a $5 foot long.
Oh, yeah, $5 foot.
So what was he talking about?
It wasn't
about?
A foot long. It was, I think it was missing something. It wasn't a foot long.
But it wasn't accurate. The bread isn't
it's not accurate. So he feels as though they lie or they like trying to like eat his money and eat people's money or just scam him in some type of way. So he's like suing the whole company and like it's a case. But then again, he's kind of right because your measurement, when you're using data and numbers, it have to be accurate. Like Ronald said, if you're building a building, there's no way you just gonna build the building. One side is crooked. You got one side 0.5 meter and the other side 1 meter. It's gonna be uneven. So you have to have an accurate amount of measurement.
In some situations, it really doesn't matter about the measurement being a little bit off. Only if you care that much, then I guess your measurement have to be there. I remember doing some math problem about this in class, but I'm not sure what it was. I forgot what assignment was, but Mr. Mao made us in a group and we had to decide whether their company was right or the person that bought the stuff was right. And there was no conclusion to our math behind it because some people believe that the company should have said exactly what was in the problem, but others believe that the person that bought the stuff shouldn't even care that much about it because it wasn't a big deal because it wasn't so much difference to it. So in some senses it mattered, but others it doesn't matter. It mainly depends on the person that's buying the product or that's selling the product.
So on page 18, there is a paragraph that says, "A river cannot, we are told, rise above its source. Well, it can seem to if there is a pumping station concealed somewhere about it. It is equally true that the result of a sampling study is no better than the sample it is based on. By the time the data have been filtered through layers of statistical manipulation and reduced to a decimal-pointed average, the result begins to take on an aura of conviction that a closer look at the sampling would deny." And I think this is a very true paragraph. We think this is a true paragraph. Because when something unexpected happens, it is usually like something concealed that you don't know about. I guess that results in statistics, like an unforeseen outcome. There's always something that there is often a lurking variable that you don't take into consideration. So I think that that's true. And that's just like a river. If a river overflows, there's a reason why it overflowed. Maybe it rained too much. So the last paragraph of chapter 1 reads, "Actually, as we have seen, it is not necessary that a poll be rigged, that is, the results be deliberately twisted in order to create a false impression. The tendency of the sample to be biased in this consistent direction can rig it automatically." So I guess that is also true, because if there's a survey that someone is taking, and it's more of one type of person than, like, for instance, more upper class people than lower class people in the school. The upper class people, since they're upper class, may have a different view on what the survey is about. So that could definitely affect the outcome of the survey. We believe that is important.
Hello. Once again, this is chapter 5 of our podcast. And chapter 5 is mainly about reading graphs, how you can tell graph by the way you look at graphs, as in depending on the numbers you use.
And the scale. Yes. And I think that is very true. The scale is very important to how the graph looks, because if the numbers are far apart, for instance, your graph, the changes in your graph, in the line may not look as drastic as they actually appear to be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it is important to scale your graph properly in a way that it correctly shows how the data is. So, because, you know, you can misunderstand. It could lead you to think that the data is, for instance, we could be like measuring the ages when people die, I guess, and it would look like pretty much a straight line if you had like, if your scale was large, if you had like people that die between 30 and 200, I guess. It may look like a straight line, but if you went from 50 to 80, you would be able to see the, you would see it would represent the data a little better, scaled that way. What do you guys think?
I think people can use that as their advantage depending on how you want to show your graph to whoever you want to show it to.
Yeah, you're right. That is a good point because, like, if you were trying to sell a product, you may want your graph to look a certain kind of way.
You have anything to say?
You basically said it all. But I agree with both the art and you, so.
I don't know how you graph
it. Thank you,
and
Jerry.
The graph has to be accurate in order. In order to understand what are you looking for, and it matters the most.
Yes. Okay, and now we will talk about chapter 6, which is called The One-Dimensional Picture. And this chapter pretty much talks about how in a one-dimensional picture, that when you represent data in a one-dimensional graph, for instance, it can give you a false impression of the data. For instance, if you have like a money bag, it said, and you increase the size of the money bag by 3, the money bag, the ratio of the smaller money bag to the larger money bag would be 1 to 9. As opposed to if you had a bar graph, it would be 1 to 3, and you could see it much more clearly. So that allows you to lie to your audience. What do you guys think?
And they also talk about how when you look at the image, they largen the length of the length of the picture and then the width of it, which make it more than it should actually be.
Yeah, so when they say like 3 times something, you know, it depends on what you mean, 3 times.
Like, when they have the, on the graph, it shows a bar graph that was 3, and then the USA was 3 added to that 3, so it makes it 60 and 30. So, like, 1/3 of what you're trying to prove. And if you have the bag, if you have 2, the United States have 6 bags because you're doubling it each time. But if you don't do it on the graph, like you said, it wouldn't be clear. But if you do it as a picture, what she was trying to say, you would draw it, I think, 4 times what the actual picture is, bigger, because you extending the length and the width of it. This is chapter 7, and it's called The 7 Attached Figure, which is about it's like an experiment. If you're trying to figure out if something works and it doesn't work how you want it to work, you could do something else. And then if that results come out as the same, you could compare it and be like, oh, it was the same or it was close than what I was expecting. Like with the weight commercial and medicine they be making, like they would say this would make you lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks. But when it was actually trying to find a medicine that makes you lose 10 pounds in, like, 1 week maybe, but if it's closer, if the percentage is closer to what the expecting value is, they would just put it as, oh, yeah, you could also use this too because it would work just how the other one would have worked. Which yes. God, what you think?
I agree with you with that. It's a good way to show, like, that if you want to sell something, I guess. But it lies. I mean, it may not be. It doesn't show the side effects, for instance, like with the medicine or something. Like, you're talking about how it makes you lose 10 pounds. What if it makes you, like, I don't know, gives you a greater chance of dying or something, you know? I don't think that would be a very good time to exaggerate. I mean, if the company's that desperate for money, I mean, I guess the what the money, but I mean it's people's lives at stake. So you have to like, you know, determine when it would be a good idea to exaggerate with something like that and when it wouldn't.
For the medicine part, I feel as though if it's carrying the symptom of it, of the whatever you have, then I guess it's okay because it's killing the symptom, which should be carrying.
Relieving the symptom, not curing the symptom.
Well, relieving the symptom. That should actually cure the whatever you have, right?
Well, no, because cold medicine doesn't cure the common cold. It just relieves your symptoms, hides them. We don't have a cure for the common cold.
True.
But that's a different story.
True. Thank you. Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah. Go.
So, we will now talk about Chapter 8, which is called Post Hoc Rides Again. And this chapter is about using, like,
this chapter is about assumptions in statistics.
Yes, assumptions.
In statistics, how people just assume one cause.
What cause and effect.
What cause and effect something as, what was the example?
Well, they were saying that if you smoke, you get bad grades. So,
and the author was just talking about how smoking and bad grades doesn't add up. It doesn't make no sense.
There's no connection.
No connection to it.
So, I agree with that because you can take data. You don't have to make statements like that. I mean, if the take data to prove that it like has no connection. You know?
Also, he's basically questioning what the person is saying. Are those the people who's actually failing classes, who's getting bad grades, who took up more smoking because they're getting bad grades because of the stress and whatever problem they're facing? That's why they're smoking. But the data is saying, oh, yeah, people who smoke get bad grades and people who doesn't smoke get good grades.
Yeah, they don't tell the whole truth. That's a good point. So here's a quote that I found interesting. It says that it was talking about college, and it says that these figures show you that if your son or daughter attends college, you will probably earn more money than if you decide to spend the next 4 years in some other manner. And this quote is on page 93. And I think that is very true because when they do act like if you go to college, you automatically make more money. But Bill Gates didn't go to college, and I mean, look at how rich he is. He was a dropout. So I definitely think that that is an unwarranted conclusion. That it's the post hoc fallacy at its best, the book says it is. It just gives you an assumption that one thing is one way, and it may not actually be that way. All right, so now this is chapter 9. It's called How to Staticulate, and it's about, like, how to manipulate people with statistics and make them believe stuff about statistics.
So they take their y-axis and try to persuade the readers from using tricks in the book to get people to buy their books or, like, whatever they're trying to produce using the tricks from the book.
Yeah, I didn't read
that. Rhino, go ahead. How do you feel, Rhino?
About
what I just said?
Can you repeat it?
Some tricks that the author uses to persuade the readers into buying, like, whatever they're trying to sell. Advertisement, copywriters.
I think that's true. They do say stuff to make people buy stuff.
This chapter was very, like, not the best. I don't agree with what the author was saying personally because I feel as though it just doesn't make sense to me. And each time I read it, I just don't understand it.
I think it's repeating itself because the last chapter we talked about the same thing, but it's used different examples as in the lab chapter talk about how assumptions is used in statistics, and that's the same thing that I'm hearing from all this chapter too.
How do you feel, Rhino?
What was the point I found interesting on page 115? And it said, the odd thing about percentiles is that a student with a 99 percentile rating is probably quite a bit superior to one standing at 90, while those at 40 and 60 may be almost of equal achievement. I think that's true. I mean, it's
so
like the same amount of part.
In other words, what is the author trying to say?
Like, if you have a 99 percentile, it's a lot different than having a 90 percentile.
Because of the percent rates and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, that's almost 100%. So, but if you're in the 40th percentile or the 60th percentile, you're still failing. So.
Which matters the most?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So now we're talking about chapter 10, which is called "How to Talk Back to a Statistic." And this chapter, like, talks about like how to tell if like a statistic is genuine. So you can ask questions like, who said so, or how does that person know, and what's missing, and did somebody change the subject, and does it make sense? So they all pretty much, you know.
Explain themselves.
Explain, yeah. What do you think?
This chapter summed up the whole book, and it talked about how in the first was it first or second? I think it was second chapter, how the magazine, and it was telling me, talking about how the author is missing the magazine. And it also talked about how the average of certain things are not mentioned in the book. And the New York magazine, I guess the author wasn't stated either.
Also, I feel as though it's just some things that you need to have more information to make the business more accurate, because like this said, there's a lot of parts that's missing and a lot of messages for who know, who said it, how you figure out. You just need like a nice, simple, clear explanation. It shouldn't be biased towards the reader. It shouldn't be biased toward somebody who's buying your product. It shouldn't be biased at all. You just need a nice, clear explanation.
Okay.
Bye, Mr. Mouse.